Welcome back. In today's EP Connection episode, we're going to discuss the existence of hierarchy. Oh, I mean elitism. In particular, under such a societal structure of where we live in today, I remember there's a term for this, meritocracy, right?
Yeah. Meritocracy is actually an intuitive concept that defining it feels redundant for me. It is the idea that social and economic rewards should track talents, efforts, and achievements. Spots at the most prestigious educational institutions should go to the smartest kids. Positions at the highest paying firms should be given to the most skilled workers. While the term meritocracy was first coined just over 60 years ago, it has become so deeply ingrained into our collective ethos that it feels hard to imagine a just society organized any other way.
Oh, I see. It is not surprising then that most criticism of meritocracy is made by those who accept its basic principles. Oh, speaking of which, I recall the scandal in admissions in 2019. The story broke of a far-reaching college admissions scandal involving at least 50 super-rich parents who essentially bribed their children's way into elite colleges and universities. In a rare moment of national bipartisanship, voices from across the political spectrum reacted in outrage to this revelation.
Oh yeah. This is what makes Daniel Markovic's book, The Meritocracy Trap, so fascinating. At its core, The Meritocracy Trap is a comprehensive and rather scathing critic of the aspirational view. The author argues that the meritocracy itself is the problem. It produces radical inequality, it stifles social mobility, and also makes everyone, including apparent winners, miserable. These are not the symptoms for systematic malfunction. They are the product of a system that is working exactly as it should, as it is supposed to be. Well, at the same time, the author refuses to reject the meritocracy altogether because he instead offers a vision for completely reimagining it.
But is the success of an individual entirely his or her own doing? Are not factors like class, caste, and race relevant? Privileged individuals have more resources, opportunities, and networks that gave them a head start. However, merit is deeply entwined with cultural a capital that creates a sense of belonging among individuals coming from similar backgrounds. This leads to an unconscious bias that significantly impacts their decisions, probably manifested in job interviews. Merit, therefore, should be understood in subject's framework. The acknowledgement of shared cultural capital influencing our perceptions of what qualifies as meritorious is necessary.
Well, the subjectivity of merit is evident in its historical evolution. The area of merit has been shaped by the values and its biases of each era. Ancient societies valued physical strength and military prowess, while the Renaissance emphasized intellectual achievements. The industrial age prioritized technical skills and innovation, and what becomes today is the merit includes educational qualifications, professional experience, emotional intelligence, and cultural awareness. So institutional mechanisms for assessing merit, such as standardized tests and interviews, are also contingent upon the idea of merit of all the time. As society evolves, so does the concept of merit. This brings us to another intriguing question. Is a theoretically perfect meritocracy desirable? In The Tyranny of Merit, Michael Sandel provides a startling inversion of what a common sense. Does one's possession of the capacity to provide the services that the market demands legitimize his or her claim to an increased share of the social dividend?
Obviously, that's a tough question to answer. On one hand, it makes sense that people who contribute more to society should be rewarded for their efforts. But Sandals is pointing out the deeper issue here. Does having the skill or knowledge that the market values really make someone morally deserving of their own rewards? And more importantly, does it make the others who didn't succeed any less worthy? In a world where success is equated with merit, it's easy to start viewing those who don't succeed as someone who lack in character or drive.
Yeah, exactly. Sandel challenges us to rethink the whole premise. He argues that the notion of a meritocratic system can lead to arrogance amongst the successful and resentment among the less fortunate. So if we believe that success is entirely merit-based, then it follows that those who don't succeed are somehow at fault of their own failure. This kind of thinking, Sandel suggests, ignores the structural inequalities that limit the opportunity for so many. For example, if you're not born with any of those opportunities at its first hand, you may not be succeeding in your entire life. So that's blaming on yourself at all. So even if someone works incredibly hard and talented, they may never reach their full potential if they lack the right resources, education, or connections.
It sounds like the conversation around meritocracy, then. It's about much more than just who gets the best jobs or gets into the best schools. It's really about fairness and whether we're using the right measures to define what's fair in the first place. If we don't acknowledge that privilege plays a role in success, we're not really giving anyone a fair chance, are we?
No, we're not. And that's where the problem lies. Even though meritocracy is often presented as a level playing field, the reality is not everyone starts from the same place. The system might reward the most talented and hardworking people, but only if they already have the access to the resources needed to develop those talents in the first place. That's why we see the persistent inequalities in the society. Even in systems that are supposedly meritocratic, if anything, meritocracy in its current form can end up reinforcing existing hierarchies rather than dismantling them.
And there's a pretty grim reality to face, especially for people like us who are still figuring out our place in the world. We're taught that if we just work hard enough, we can achieve anything. But when you dig a little deeper, it's clear that not quite that simple. It's not just about hard work, it's about opportunities that you have along the way and whether the system is really designed to give anyone those opportunities.
Right, and that's where we have to ask ourselves, if the system is broken, how do we fix it? And what does a fairer version of meritocracy will look like?
This is becoming so much interesting. Wait a second, let's rewind back. What motivates us to do such an episode? With all this talk about meritocracy, it's hard not to think about our own student council presidential election earlier in this year. It was almost like watching a mini version of what we've been discussing play out in real time.
Oh, I know exactly where you're getting that. The winner, well, he was pretty much the poster child for meritocracy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Good grades, top scores on all his AP exams, and that long list of extracurriculars. On paper, he had everything that would make someone think, oh yeah, this guy should be our leader. But when you peel back the layers, it's totally a different story.
Right. The whole campaign was framed around how qualified he was because he had fives in all his AP courses. But what did that really mean in terms of leadership? Sure, he's academically strong, but being a leader is so much more than that. It was frustrating to see how people were swayed by his grades, but almost no one was asking the tough questions about his actual leadership qualities or his integrity, for that matters.
Exactly. He basically used his academic achievements as a bridge of honor to signal that he was the most deserving candidate. But it didn't stop there. Let's not forget about the other, more questionable tactics. It wasn't just about the merit in traditional sense. There were whispers of him leveraging his connections, maybe even some nepotism, to secure more votes. The whole thing feels less about real leadership and more about stacking the odds in his favor.
Oh, for sure. There were rumors going around that he had some family connections within the administrations, and on top of that, he definitely knew how to play the popularity game. Some students said he made arrangements with certain groups to make sure they'd throw their support behind him. What's worse is that a lot of his campaign promises, like being a better mental health support and organizing more inclusive events, were completely bullshit.
Okay, yeah, I agree with that. All these, which makes it more disappointing, because he campaigned on the grand ideas of making a school a better place for everyone. But once he was in office as a president, student council president, it was his business as usual. No real changes, no follow through, and also no other like interesting or some like impactful events. His win wasn't based on the substance of his platform. It was based on how he could present himself as the ideal candidate. But where was the actual leadership?
And that's the thing about meritocracy in practice, right? We were all told that the person with the best resume would automatically make the best leader. But that's such a narrow way of looking at things. His success wasn't really about merit at all. It was about privilege, connections, and the superficial appeal of having perfect scores. It's completely overlooked what really matters in a leader: empathy, vision, and the ability to follow through on promises.
Which is exactly why meritocracy, as we see in our society and even in something as small as a school election, can be so misleading. It tricks us into thinking that the people with the most accolades on the highest score are inherently the most deserving of leadership roles, when in reality, those accolades often mask deeper flaws. We need to start asking ourselves if we're valuing the right things in our leaders.
I agree. It's easy to get caught up in the numbers, but the true essence of leadership, especially in a student council role, should be about representing the students, making sure their voices are heard, and actually implementing policies that prove their school's experience. It's not about who had the most impressive list of accomplishments on a paper.
And in this case, we saw how focusing too much on the academic merit led to a winner who didn't live up on his promise. It was a harsh reminder that just because someone is good at tests doesn't mean they're going to be a good leader.
Exactly. The whole situation makes you think, rethink what we're valuing in our schools, and whether we're putting too much emphasis on wrong qualities. If we're going to make decisions based on merit, we need to redefine what merit actually means, especially when it comes to leadership.
Well said. Maybe next time we'll be all a little more thoughtful about what we look for in a leader. Or not just in terms of qualifications, but in terms of characters and follow through. And that's what inspires us to become a better person, as we always will do. So after all, leadership isn't about who's the smartest, but about who's willing to serve the people that they represent.
Let's hope so. All right, folks, that's all we've got for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll start thinking more critically about meritocracy and what it really makes to become a leader. Until next time, this is EP Connection, signing off.
See you next time. Remember to stay tuned on our Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, etc. We hope to see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.